All right, so we may as well run over the Mishnah again on Menchas on the Beis. The Mishnah said, in regards to an Asheva, Zerin Tachter Yerokis B'Moisek Shom, you're allowed to plant vegetables under it in the winter, Avalo B'Moisek Chama, but not in the summer, because during the winter, the tree is making things worse for the vegetables. They need sunlight, and then the tree is blocking it. But not during the summer, because then the shade is good for them, and then you're benefiting from the Asheva.
Right.
Rabbi Yossi says you're not allowed to plant vegetables under there in the winter either, because the leaves fall on them, and they become mulch, they become fertilizer that helps promote the growth. No, you have vegetables that grow during the winter. You have vegetables that are planted or that are planted early in the winter, and I don't remember exactly which ones, but you have. A hairless goat? What about it? That's from a couple of weeks ago. Bar Chakach. I mean, that's from a couple of weeks ago. Come on. Let's focus on what we have. So the Gemara asks, Lememir de Rav Yossi Sova Zevazeh Gorim Osud. Are we going to say then, based on this Mishnah, that Rav Yossi holds when you have two things contributing to the growth of something, in this case you have the leaves from the tree, which become fertilizer, you also have the ground, which is there, which is not intrinsically osur. And Rabbi Yossi is going to say, even though it takes the combination of those two things, nevertheless, the vegetables are going to be osur, and therefore he's saying you're not allowed to plant vegetables there anytime. But Rabbanan Amri Zevazeh Gerim Mutter, whereas the Rabbanan would hold that it's mutter, and therefore they're going to say because they would hold Zevazeh Gerim as mutter, that just because you have fertilizer from the Asherah tree contributing to them, it doesn't matter. You also have the ground. You also have there's a ground around there that's contributing.
Two things,
which are the Rabbanon would argue is mutter.
So you have to, according to the Rabbanon, you have to have a row of one.
Never mind. Okay, some of the Rishonim say maybe a row, but the point is, in other words, that you have that the fact that there's fertilizer falling on it, the fact that there's leaves falling on it from the tree and becoming fertilizer, apparently the Rabbanon are not concerned with that. The problem with that is, it's Hashemin and Lohu, but we find... by the way, now Tosfos points out a shitta, which seems to be unique only to them. Most of the other Rishonim don't accept this, that Tosfos brings from the Rashbam, that there's two different kinds of Zevazeh Gerim. One where both of them are contributing towards the same kind of thing. For example, here the dirt and the fertilizer both are promoting the growth of the plant in the same way. Versus, for example, you have, let's say, sunlight versus earth. Each one contributes to a plant. Obviously, a plant needs both of them, but each one contributes in a different way. You couldn't say, for example, each one contributes in a different way. Sunlight is one thing a plant needs. Dirt is something
else. Leaf is one way.
They form the earth in which the plant grows and from which it gets its nutrients, as opposed to the sunlight is a whole different kind of thing. So in other words, the point would be that the Rabbanon aren't going to say, for example, that vegetables during the summer is going to be mutter because you have sunlight, which is mutter, and you have the shade of the Asherah, which is also, because that wouldn't be considered Zevazeh Gerim even according to them, because those are two completely different kinds of things. The good of the sun versus the good of the shade. Here we're talking about two different things, the earth and the fertilizer, which both of them together contribute exactly the same thing to the plant. They provide the matrix in which it grows and the nutrients.
The same type of thing.
That's what the Rashbam is saying in Tosfos. Most other Rishonim don't accept that. They say Zevazeh Gerim could even be two different kinds of things. All right. Anyway, the problem with that understanding in the Mishnah, ha'ipcha shemenin lahu, we find earlier in our Pedek exactly the other way around. Nitznan, we learned in a Mishnah over there, Rav Yossi o'im ha'sheichas v'zorah l'ruach o'imat b'liyam. Rav Yossi said that when it comes to destroying of a zorah, you grind it up and scatter the ground up pieces to the wind, or you throw it into the sea. Amrulai, and the Chachamim told him, grinding it up and scattering it to the wind is not good, because those ground up pieces are going to end up becoming fertilizer. And the Pasuk says, Yidbak Yachom Omer Nachedim, none of the banned substance of Avodah Zarah should remain in your hand. So, Kasha did Rabbanon, Adi Rabbanon, Kasha did Rabbi Yossi, Adi Rabbi Yossi. So we have a contradiction.
Over there they're saying
it's not good enough to grind it up and throw it to the wind, because eventually that's going to become fertilizer and plants are going to get grown from that. Here they seem to have no problem with leaves falling off the tree and then fertilizing plants. And Rabbi Yossi is the other way around. There he's fine with throwing it to the wind, and here he's saying the leaves are no good. That's it. Contradicting each other, right? So Bishleim did Rabbi Yosi So fine, we can answer at least half of the question. We can say there's no contradiction between the two statements of Rabbi Yosi, because the difference is Hosim to Ka'ozel Le'ibud Matir, because over there basically he's doing it in order to destroy the Avodah Zarah. Okay, so one second. So Rashi learns like this, in other words. Rashi learns, the whole point why he's grinding it up is he's trying to destroy the Avodah Zarah. At that point, the Avodah Zarah is all bought. Really, we discussed earlier... Hold on. This is the way Rashi's learning. Let's first talk according to Rashi.
Yeah, but...
One second. Rabbi Yosi, we can argue, is figuring like this. In that case over there, now we learned earlier in the Perek, we discussed the whole matter of an Avodah Zarah that breaks on its own. Where we said we brought over there a discussion between Rish Lakish and Rabbi Yochanan, whether it will be Mutar Bahana after all. Do we say that once it broke, the Goy is automatically Mabasalit or not? We had a case a few days ago where an Avodah Zarah broke by itself.
Yeah.
We had a Machlokes with Rish Lakish and Rabbi Yochanan about that. If we take the view that an Avodah Zarah that broke by itself is Mutar, well then, grinding up the Avodah Zarah in order to be Mabasalit is no less a destruction of it than it breaking spontaneously. It is already bottle, therefore there's not really such an issue. So you can't argue it's Zevzeg Goyim. You can't argue that the dust from this ground up of a Dezara is still something that's also that Rabbi Yosi should be worried about. Because fundamentally...
One case is natural, the other one was
command. We'll talk about what Tosafot says, but first according to Rashi. When we say over here that a Jew is grinding it up to destroy it, that's no, on the face of it, no worse than the case of where it broke by itself. We said over there that when it broke by itself, the Goy is going to figure it couldn't save itself, therefore it's not going to save me, and therefore he's mentally mevatel at that point. A Jew destroying it should be not any worse than that. Therefore, Rabbi Yosi could take the view of the dust of it is not really fundamentally author, and therefore it's not a question of zevzeg goyim. Even the Rabbanon, even when we said over there it's author, it was only a gzera because what if the yid picks it up first and then no bissel was possible, but in principle it should be mutter. So therefore Rabbi Yosi might argue that over there it's not really author, it's only author because of a gzera, therefore it's not a kasha. Hacha, but like ka'azal the ibud author, whereas over here he's not doing it in order to destroy it because natural for a tree to shed leaves. So therefore you have zevzeg goyim author. So Rabbi Yosi we can find for that way. Now Tosfos points out though that only works according to Rish Lakish's opinion. We had Rabbi Yochanan's opinion that if a disorder breaks on its own, it remains author. Hello, that it remains author. So how is this going to work as far as that? So therefore, Tosfos's answer is that no. What we mean over here, Hosam to Ka'azal Le'ibud, practically speaking, we're not talking about there's a question of has proper bissel been done to the Avodah Zarah. We're talking about practically speaking, if you take an Avodah Zarah and grind it up and scatter the pieces to the wind, practically speaking, you're not going to have enough of it landing in any one place that it's going to do any kind of real fertilization. And the Rabbanon are still concerned about that. Rabbi Yosi is going to say it's one thing if you were to take all of the pieces of it, and if you were to take all the sawdust of it, for example, and put it in one place where it could fertilize an area, that's one thing. But you're scattering it to the wind, and a little bit of it is going to be here, and a little bit of it over there, he's not going to worry about. Whereas over here, you have the vegetables are growing under a tree where there's a constant fall of leaves on there during the season when the leaves are falling. So that's Kosovo's explanation of how the Gemara wants to reconcile Rabbi Yosi's.
But there's one question that we never really mentioned. What do we want? We want to erase the Avodah Zarah from the beginning or into the future?
What do you mean, from the beginning or into the future? We want to get rid of the Avodah Zarah. We want to make sure that no Hana is being had from this Avodah Zarah. So we have to grind it. So Rabbi Yosi had said the way to do that is you grind it up and throw it to the wind. But Rabbanon argued with him, the problem is, fine, you're taking care of destroying it, but you still have sawdust left of it.
So that's the question.
The Rabbanon don't want you to have any hanok.
Any
hanok.
What kind of hanok you get from a tiny piece of something?
So that's the point. The Rabbanon are still arguing, still help fertilize on the face of it. Well, that's what we're going to have to discuss in our Sugya. But on the face of it, the Rabbanon over there are saying that even a tiny bit of the sawdust from it that's going to go flying someplace where it can end up fertilizing the ground will create a problem. Rabbi Yosi apparently is not concerned about that. But in our Mishnah, it's the other way around. The Rabbanon are not concerned about the leaves falling. Rabbi Yosi is.
Yeah.
So again, Rabbi Yosi, we can find answer. Either
in the previous sugya, we said that when the worship the branches and the tree is left alone, it wasn't exploded.
Fine, that's a different matter. That's a different case over there. They were not talking about destroying. They were talking about the right. You cut off the parts of the branches that were worship, and the
they
rest is not.
So
you cut off the piece. You cut off enough to make sure that all the pieces that grew afterwards. Fine, same difference. So the point is that we're not focusing on that. We're focusing on, okay, so again, Rabbi Yossi, you can say, is going to say, when you're scattering it to the wind, either like Rashi says, technically it's already bottle, or like Tosfos says, practically speaking, not enough of it is going to land in any one place. Therefore, Rabbi Yossi is not concerned about it. Whereas over here, there's no bittul because it's natural for a tree to drop leaves, and a lot of them fall in one place, and therefore, Rabbi Yossi is concerned about it. El of the Rabbanan, Ad Rabbanan, Kasha. But what are you going to do with the two opinions of the Rabbanan? Where there, they're concerned even about... Yeah, they're concerned even about a little bit of the sawdust, and here they're not.
True.
So the answer is... well, of course there's an answer. April. Answer number one is flip them around. Say that in our Mishnah, Rabbi Yossi is the one who says that it's okay to plant vegetables there, and the Rabbanan are the one who's saying no good because leaves are falling. The both say the light table. Or another possibility is you don't have to flip them around, because we can answer like this. Rabbi Yossi Kedashani, and Rabbi Yossi we can reconcile, like we said, because over there he is actually being mevatelit, or not enough of it lands in any one place to be a concern, whereas over here there's no bissel and a lot of it lands in one place.
The leaves.
Dirabbanan, how do we...
The leaves fall all
up. No, but a lot of them fall in any given place around the tree. So Rabbi Yossi we can reconcile like that. Dirabbanan, how do we reconcile what the Rabbanan say? That over there, they seem to be having a problem with Zevazeg Gurdim, the little bit of sawdust that comes from this ground up of a disorder, versus over here, they're not concerned about the leaves. The answer is, Kid Omer of Mori Brezer of Kahana, just like we find something that Mori Brezer of Kahana says in a completely different context. Now, you have the context is like this. You have an animal that was supposed to be a carbon. It became possible. It developed a mum, it was used for an aveiro, whatever all the possibilities are that could be possible for a korban now. Now what happens, for the most part, you can treat it like colon, you can shecht it and anybody can eat it, but there are still certain rules that apply to it as Sulaim of Dushan. One of them is that, one of the things you're allowed to do with it, like you would with a mum, what are you looking for?
Stone.
So when you have this animal Sulam of Dosh and you shecht it, fine, you can take, you strip off the skin as usual and you use the skin to make leather or whatever. However, one of the ways that you might go about stripping off the skin is called margil. It's called that you strip it off from one leg. Like you start taking off the skin in such a way that it comes off as one complete piece without any cuts in it. And the advantage of it is you could use such a skin. You could use it, for example, you could use it for a bellows, you could use it for a water skin, you could whatever.
Okay.
So therefore, are you allowed to do that with the line of dushing? On the face of it, you should argue yes, because that way you'll... One second. Relax. When it comes to Sulam of Dushan, we know you're allowed to have hanaf, and you're allowed to have hanaf in the skin. However, you're not allowed to do this margilin. You're not allowed to strip off the skin in such a way that it comes off all as one piece. And why is that? On the face of it, you should be allowed to, because then the skin will sell for a higher price. The reason is that Kid Omer of Mori Greder Kahana Mashmash Biach Ba'er Purgum Abasa, because of Mori Greder Kahana points out, yes, you have an advantage in that now the skin will get a higher price. On the other hand, because now it's because there's no cut in it, it's all one complete piece.
Right.
On the other hand, the disadvantage is that that's offset by now there's a hefted when it comes to the meat, because when you have to, if you strip off the skin like that, it ends up that a lot of the meat of the animal remains with the skin and goes to waste. Mm-hmm. So therefore, it offsets each other, and therefore you don't have enough of an offset that you're going to have a gain from one and a loss from the other. So it offsets each other, therefore you can't do it. Hachanami, the same thing over here. We have a gain that's offset by a loss. Masha, mashviach, v'nevira, pogim, masel. The Rabbanan would hold, yes, the vegetables are improved by the leaves falling on them and becoming mulch and becoming fertilizer. On the other hand, it's equally, there's an equal loss by the fact that the vegetables are in too much shade, that the tree is casting shade on them and preventing them from growing properly. Those two things offset each other. Therefore, you don't really have hana from the Avodah Zarah that Rabbanan will hold.
So we refuse to the shade actually. helps grow.
We said in the Mishnah, I skipped a line in the Mishnah by mistake when we learned it again today. Lettuce. You're not allowed to plant there in the summer or the winter. I missed that before when I was re-saying the Mishnah. That's because lettuce needs a lot of shade, and therefore, in that particular case, but not with other kinds of vegetables. Other kinds of vegetables, according to the Chachamim and our Mishnah, during the winter, the shade is really bad for them. So yes, they're benefiting from the extra fertilizer, but on the other hand, they're getting harmed by the extra shade, and those two things cancel each other out. Therefore, that Rabbanan will hold, it's not really getting hana from the Asherah, per se.
Well, depending on the
Rabbanan will hold, that those two things offset each other. Therefore, they will say that therefore it's not a problem. Now, Rishonim deal with the question, nevertheless, fine, that may explain so far, I mean, we're still going to continue with the whole, we have a whole discussion yet to go about Zev Zegor and when it's also when it's Mutter and according to the different opinions. But before we get to that, Rishonim discussed the question, fine. So we've established, according to the Chachamim, that there's no reason to aster the plants, the vegetables, even though they grew partially on fertilizer of the Asherah. Because whether we say Zev Zegorim that they allow it, or whether we say because one offsets the other, but why are you allowed to do it like
then
the other one? Right. But he's still looking for Shkalim, yes. He's looking for Shkalim. It's in the English as well. Let him look. Okay. The question is, though, why is the Mishnah saying that you're allowed to plant these vegetables there l'chatchila? B'dyeved, fine, but why l'chatchila? So there's a variety of answers among Rishonim. Yeah, so there's a variety of answers. The Meiri says that it is kind of b'dyeved. All it means is, in other words, an Asherah is overhanging your field. You're allowed to plant your field normally. You don't have to make sure that none of the seeds get under the Asherah. Some of them might end up getting under there or close to there and be fertilized by the leaves. You don't have to worry about it. You can plant that. You can plant around that area.
It's not
your Asherah? No, it's obviously not your Asherah. If it's your Asherah, it would be also about now. Yeah, but we're talking about it's somebody else's Asherah overhanging your field. The Meiri learns, for example, okay, the Asherah is covering this area. Fine, you're not allowed to plant directly underneath it, specifically, but you're allowed to plant around here. You don't have to worry that some of the seeds are going to wind up over here directly underneath it. That's the Meiri. A lot of other Rishonim talk about different other possibilities.
You say that even around the roots are going to have an art from the field.
The roots of the tree are not your problem. They're not, what do you mean they're going to have an art? No. Yeah, no.
They're going to grow.
Yeah, but you don't have the ability to do anything about it. You don't have the ability to make the grow. You cut down as a shader. So therefore, you're gone. No, so, okay, anyway, you have a number of other Rishonim give different other reasons. The leaves just fall on there on their own. It's not something that you did. It's not something even necessarily you planted the vegetables over there specifically for that purpose in mind. Same thing. And they can also become fertilizer, yeah. All right. Anyway, so that's one way. So that can be a way of explaining then, so that Rabbanan are concerned about Zev Zegorim. However, over here, since the gain is offset by a loss because the shade is bad for them, therefore that Rabbanan are allowing it. And again, these Rishonim are talking about why it should be allowed for Chachila, because the leaves are falling spontaneously or because then you don't have it in mind, and then various other answers along those lines. However, the question now becomes the Sover of Yosi Zev Zegorim Aser. So you're telling me Rav Yosi holds that. So according to this, what did we come out? That apparently Rav Yosi is holding Zev Zegorim is fine.
Wow.
Because he seems to be saying that it's one thing over here, it's one thing over here where there's no bittle involved, but over there where there is, where after all the sawdust of the ground up of a Dezara is going to fertilize things. And Rav Yosi apparently is not concerned about that because Zev Zegorim is fine. But if we're going to say that, well, that's on the face of it. That's why he's saying that's on the face of it. Yeah.
Because you
have some of the sawdust of the Avodah Zarah is mixing with some of the local dirt over there, and plants are growing from it. Yeah. And Rabbi Yossi seems to not be concerned about that. In our Mishnah, fine, he's concerned about it because the leaves, there's no bittle. So, yeah. But are you going to tell me then Rabbi Yossi holds Zev Zegorim is allowed? That when you have these two factors that contribute to grow something, that it would be allowed? V'hatanya, or it's actually V'hatanam, it's a Mishnah in Masechta Arla. Rabbi Yossi, I'm a noting Yichul Shal Arla. Rabbi Yossi says you're allowed to plant a branch from an Arla tree. So you have a tree that's within its first 3 years. The fruit of it is also Bana. You're allowed to take off a branch from that tree and plant it to start developing a new tree.
Not?
What do you mean everything? The fact is the tree is not. The fruit of an Arla tree is also.
Yeah.
The branches are not. Therefore, Rabbi Yossi is saying you're allowed to take a branch from an Orla tree and replant it someplace else in order to grow a new tree.
Right.
And the point is, Tosfos says, even though you're not allowed to plant the fruit, as we're going to say in the next words, we don't make a Zeder that you shouldn't be allowed to plant a branch either because you might confuse them. No. The ein notin eggers from orla, but continues Rabbi Yosi, you're not allowed to plant a nut from an orla tree, mepneshu pri, because that is a fruit from the tree, and therefore it's also bana. On the other hand, Rabbi Yehuda says in the name of Rab that Rabbi Yosi admits, who he admits to is a bit of a discussion among the Rishonim, because we don't explicitly find the Chachamim arguing against him, but anyway, Rabbi Yosi agrees, she not a behivrich behirkiv, that if somebody did go and do that, he did go and plant the nut of Orla and a new tree started growing from it, or hivrich, or he bent down a branch from the tree to start growing a new tree, or hirkiv, or he grafted a branch from this tree onto another one.
Mutter.
Then that would be mutter. So Rashi learns what it means is that in the case of hivrich and hirkiv, what it'll be is the fruit from the new tree will be mutter right away, because that is a gerim is mutter. So therefore, so we see v'tanya nami hachi, and indeed we learn like that. The zevizeh gerim is you have, for example, in the case of the grafting. So in the case of the grafting or the layering, it's easiest to understand. You have the old tree and you have the new branch that's attached to it. Those two things together are combining to produce fruit, and Rabbi Yosi is saying that it's mutter. That's how Rashi learns. Then Rashi brings another explanation, that what we mean is, if you planted a nut from an orla tree, which itself is also bana, eventually that grew into a tree, and then you took a branch from that tree and bent it down or grafted it onto another tree, then it would be mutter. Rashi asks, why would you even need that? You already have zev zev gerim before that. Rashi himself asks on the second question. Sometimes Rashi will do that. He'll bring a second appeal, bring a second explanation, and ask on it. He asks, why should that be? Even without that, even if you have the original tree itself, you have the nut of Isser and the ground of Heter combined together. If we're saying Zevazet Gerim is Mutter, according to Rav Yosi, if that's what we're assuming over here, then it should be Mutter. Why do you need that? We're only talking about the second generation, the tree that grew from this nut, and now you're taking a branch from it and grafted it.
But it's not really Zevizeh Gerim, because you could say Zevizeh Gerim is one takes and one gives.
Zevizeh Gerim is you have two things contributing to create one result. Now, Tosfos learned before that they both have to be of the same type. So you can't have, for example, sunlight and dirt, because those are two different types of contributions. Rashi does not agree with that. Rashi does not have to agree with that. He can say Zevizeh Gerim is even you have the nut which was planted in the ground. Without it, no tree would grow. On the other hand, you have the ground. Without it, the nut is never going to germinate, never going to grow. That would be Zevizeh Gerim. And Rabbi Yosi is saying that, and we're saying over there, Rav is saying, and it's confirmed by a Braita, that Rabbi Yosi is agreeing with Mutter. So Rashi is asking, why should you need to understand not that Rehivrich Rehirkiv over here to be two separate steps? A, you planted a nut from Orla, then it grew into a tree, then you took a branch from that tree and layered it or grafted it, and only then is it mutter. Rashi is arguing you shouldn't need that. Once you plant the nut, already you have Zevizeh Gerim, and if we're arguing Zevizeh Gerim is mutter, then that's good enough. On the other hand, so Tosfos disagrees, because they hold, in particular, according to their shitta before, that Zevizeh Gerim have to be that the two things are of the same type, like not sunlight and dirt, for example. So because of that, and because of a few other problems with Rashi's explanation, they understand that actually, yes, Rabbi Yosi would be saying that if you did plant a nut of Asherah, not of Asherah, of Orla, if you did plant the nut, then B'dieved, even B'dieved, all the Peiris will be also. When we say, Moshe Rabbi Yosi, Shem not of Rehivrich, the Hirkiv Mutter, he means, like Rashi's second explanation, if you planted the nut of Orla, and then later on you took a branch from that tree and grafted it onto another tree, then that would be mutter. That's where you have the Zevizeh Gerim, because you have a tree that grew from this nut, which is osur, and you have the different tree that you grafted it onto, which is mutter. And that would be Zevizeh Gerim. The old tree with the new branch from this tree, that's osur. So that's the understanding that turns to success. Anyway, so therefore, so we see from that Rabbi Yosi holds Zevizeh Gerim is mutter. So what are you telling me, Rabbi Yosi? So before we argued that Rabbi Yosi is the one who says Zevizeh Gerim is mutter. Before we argued that he's the one who says he's osur. That's why he said the leaves over here falling from the tree create a problem. Whereas the Rabbanan, I got it backwards before, sorry. Whereas the Rabbanan would say Zevizeh Gerim, presumably would say Zevizeh Gerim is mutter. We don't care about the leaves falling from the tree. They combine together with the dirt, and therefore it's not a problem. And anyway, you have the promotion of growth by the leaves that become fertilizer, but it's offset by the, even if you're worried about hana from the tree, it's offset by the extra shade. So Rav Yossi, you're telling me based on our mission, the whole Zevzeh Gerdim is also, but based on that story with Orla, it sounds like he's saying it's Mutter. The Chitema, either according to Rashi or according to Tosfos, right. The Chitema, again, right, because according to Rashi, we're talking about even you planted the nut to begin with, and already the fruit from that tree will eventually be Mutter, or according to Tosfos, you planted the nut, which the tree itself from that nut is Osir, but then you took a branch from that and grafted it onto another tree. And now, eventually, the fruit from that is mutter, right? So either way, you have a case of zevzeh gerdim. And Rav Yossi is saying it's mutter.
The chitema. It's mutter for another reason.
No, well, the chitema. Now, you might argue, shani leila Rav Yossi, then shari sturim lavaris kasavim. You might argue, maybe Rav Yossi would make a distinction. Maybe he says, by other sturim, I'm willing to accept zevzeh gerdim, but not by avodah zarah. Therefore, he's saying over here with an asherah is different. The question is, umishani lei. Are you telling me that Rav Yossi holds of any such distinction? Between Avodah Zarah and Orla, for example. V'hatanya, what we learn in a Braita, Sodash and his dabble of the Zevel Avodah Kachavim, if you have a field that was fertilized with dung of Avodah Zarah, Shiniz Dabla is Meloshim Zevel, that was fertilized with fertilizer of Avodah Zarah, and an example of that would be, so the Rishonim talk about how exactly you would have fertilizer of Avodah Zarah, one example Rashi brings at the end of the Amud. For example, you could have blood of animals that were shechted for Avodah Zarah. Or, for example, you wouldn't have a case, for example, if you had a person say, I'm donating this pile of fertilizer, this pile of dung to Avodah Zarah. We said before, ain't hektish l'Avodah Zarah. Whatever, so it would have to be. It would have to be the blood or the dung or whatever of an animal that was shechted for Avodah Zarah, whatever. So if a field was fertilized with such fertilizer, or a cow that was fattened up using kaushinim, which is a type of beans, of Avodah Zarah. Again, the beans were worshipped, or whatever exactly the scenario, the crevice, whatever exactly the scenario is. So what do we do with that field? What do we do with that cow? Toni Chada, one braisa says, Sodati Zara Parati Shachet. One braisa says, it's no problem. You're allowed to plant that field, as Tosfos points out, after the fertilizer has already decayed, so therefore it's not visible on the ground anymore. You're allowed to shech the cow and eat it. Another braisa says that no, the field has to be left fallow until the advantage that was gained by the fertilizer is gone. And the same thing, the cow has to be put on a diet until the advantage that was gained by eating these kashinim is gone, and only then are you allowed to have an argument. So we have two braisas. My lab, Harab Yaisi, Harabana. On the face of it, one braisa is according to Rav Yossi, the other according to the Rabbanan, and therefore we would say that, again, if we're assuming so far that Rav Yossi is, we understood our Mishnah to be that the machlokas between the Chacham and Rav Yossi is on the question of zevzeh gerdim. Now here we have a case of zevzeh gerdim, because you have a field which was plantable without the fertilizer, and now the fertilizer has improved it. You have a cow that was edible before, and now it's gotten fattened up with kashin. That's not the point. The point isn't that we have two examples. The point is that we have two braises, one saying that you're allowed to use it as is, and the other one saying you have to get rid of what was accomplished through Avodah Zarah. You have to allow the field to be balanced. No, but that's fine. But if we're going to understand that in our Mishnah, that Abbanan are saying Zevzeh Gerdim is fine.
Right.
Therefore, they have no problem with the leaves falling from the trees. Rav Yossi is saying it's also, therefore, you have a problem with the leaves.
Yeah.
And you're going to, on the other hand, we find by Orla, he says it's Mutter.
Yeah.
If you're going to argue that he's going to make a distinction between Avodah Zarah and Orla, why would that be? We find in this braisa over here, the same way as we just had before in the braisa with Orla, where Rav Yossi says it's fine, after all, because Zevzeh Gerdim is Mutter. He would presumably be the one who argues over here that the field can be planted right away, because of Zevzeh Gerdim. In other words, he wouldn't be distinguishing between Avodah Zarah and something else. And on the other hand, the Rabbanon who are saying in our Mishnah, ordinarily they would say, as we said before, about a ground up of a desara, that it's also because it's going to end up fertilizing the ground. Only in our Mishnah are they being master it because the advantage of the leaves is offset by the disadvantage of the shade. So in other words, they usually hold Zevzeh Gerdim as also, we would say. Well, then if we have one braisa that's saying it's mutter in connection with Avodah Zarah, and the other one saying it's also in connection with Avodah Zarah, that has to be, one is according to Rabbi Yossi, the other according to the Rabbanan, which would mean Rabbi Yossi holds this mutter, not only in the case of Orla, like a nut of Orla, but also Avodah Zarah, so therefore Rabbi Yossi is not making that distinction. So before we were trying to say that Rabbi Yossi, though, before, is going to say that it's also, right. And therefore, in our mission, he has a problem with the lease. Right. So how is that working? Okay. The answer is loy. No, because you don't have to say that these two brises are according to that these two brises are according to the Yossi and the Rabbanon, respectively. We have a third opinion. We can say of these two brises about the cow and about the field, one is according to Rabbi Eliezer and one is according to the Chachamim. So now we have to figure out where does Rabbi Eliezer address the matter of Zeh v'zeh Gozer. Hey, Rabbi Eliezer v'Rabbanan, which case of Rabbi Eliezer versus the Chachamim do we find? So in other words, Rabbi Yossi. So in other words, what we have is like this. So far, we're going to say Rabbi Yossi is going to say when it comes to Avodah Zarah, Zeh v'zeh Gozer is awesome. Yeah. That is why he has a problem with the leaves in our mission. In the earlier in our parak, when he said you can grind up a Avodah Zarah, that's different because either you're being mabakal with them and it's not really also like Rashi says, or because not enough of it lands in any one place to make a difference, according to Tosafot. Whereas the Rabbanan would be holding Zeh v'zeh Gozer as mutter, even with Avodah Zarah. But now we're going to bring in a third opinion, Rabbi Eliezer, who will hold that there is a distinction between Avodah Zarah and other Isurim. And then we can attribute one of these prices, and then we can attribute one of these prices to him.
Right, but yeah. Couldn't Rabbi Yossi hold like Rabbi Eliezer?
If he does, then we're back to our problem.
We're back to our problem.
The whole point is we're going to find a third opinion over here, and then we can say, in other words, we don't have a contradiction within what Rabbi Yossi says. Rabbi Yossi is going to be consistent and say that... We have no reason to say that he should. We can argue, therefore, that we have three different opinions. We have the Rabbanan, we have Rabbi Eliezer, and we have Rabbi Yossi.
Three different opinions. Fine. Also,
but we don't. We're trying to figure out the contradiction in what Rabbi Yossi is saying.
Yeah.
So if we find that Rabbi Yossi accepts Zeh v'zeh Gozer and is okay with it by Orla, on the other hand, he's not okay with it by Avodah Zarah, then, on the other hand, we're going to argue that Rabbi Eliezer is going to say that Zeh v'zeh Gozer is mutter all the time.
Right.
And that Rabbanan are going to hold also all the time, and then those will be three different opinions, and therefore we don't have any contradictions.
If we
understand like that.
Yeah.
So, hey, Rabbi Eliezer Rabbanan. So what is the case of Rabbi Eliezer versus the Chacham, where we see his opinion? Elamer Rabbi Eliezer Rabbanan Disar, are you going to say that it's the case where Rabbi Eliezer argues with Rabbanan about Sa'ur, about sourdough? It's not. No, not Sa'ur with an ayin, Sa'ur with an aleph, which is sourdough.
Sourdough
is dough that's been left to become like this. If you leave dough for a certain amount of time, it becomes hummus, right? If you leave dough for 18 minutes untouched, then it becomes hummus, right?
Yeah.
Now you can have, though, in those days they didn't always have yeast, so therefore a common way of making bread hummus, of creating hummus dough in the first place, would be you'd leave out a piece of dough for a long while. It would eventually become not just a little bit hummus, but very hummus, very sour. You'd have a lot of action from yeast cells that would take place in it. It would become sour, and then they would mix a piece of it into a batch of dough, and then the yeast would multiply, and you'd have hummus bread. Nowadays, also, you can find in the stores they have sourdough bread. It's made where they make it like that instead of with yeast. Anyway. So, sa'ur is that. So you have in connection with Pesach. So, he's called sa'ur, sa'ur and chomet. We say every day in Rabban and Tam, Shrill and Yen. Okay. So, Ditnan. Now, we learn in a Mishnah in Orla as follows. Sa'ur shal cholim v'shal truma shenachlu v'seich eisa. Suppose you have sourdough of cholim and sourdough of truma that fell into a batch of dough. And, of course, truma is only allowed to be eaten by kohanim. And loy bezek de lachamet, loy bezek de lachamet. Neither piece of sourdough by itself would be enough to make this entire new batch of dough become chametz. But when it's stauful v'chimtu, loy bezek de lachamet, loy bezek de lachamet. When it's stauful v'chimtu, but the combination of them together was enough to make it.
One alone is not enough.
So on the combination is now. It, now you now on the face of it, we're talking about a case where the truma is small enough to be bottled. The thing is, if it was large enough to do chimutz by itself, it wouldn't be bottle, because like we learned in the previous parak in connection with rennet for cheese, something that's essential to the finished product can't be bottle. Sourdough is essential to have chometz bread, therefore it can't be bottle. But so the question is, can it be, the question is, here where it's not enough to make the dough sour, to make the dough chometz by itself, is what happens? Well, that's what it could be bottled, but how? But what, because it's small, because it's not enough. It's not like the davar
amam. You said that with one, it cannot do anything.
One by itself is not enough. Therefore, it's able to be bottled. But one second, Rabbi Eliezer Oyma Achar Achar Anidba. So Rabbi Eliezer says, what we do is we follow the last one. So if we have, so again, there was sourdough chulin and there was sourdough truma. Rabbi Eliezer is going to say on the face of it, that on the face of it, this is what he means. We're going to discuss now in the Gemara what he means. But on the face of it, what he's saying is if the chulin one fell in first and then afterwards the truma one fell in, then the dough will be also, then the resulting dough will be also to any, to zorim. It'll be mutter only to kohenim. Because the second one, once it fell in, is what makes it possible for it to become chometz bread. And if the truma had fallen in first, where by itself it's not enough to make the dough chometz, and then the cholin falls in, then Rabbi Eliezer would say that it's mutter to zorim, because then the second one is mevatel the first one. Whether the Isser fell in first or whether it fell in second. Now, Enoi Osser, it's not Osser. Ad Shehebe Kedei L'Chametz, unless the Truma piece is enough all by itself to cause Chimut.
Which is not the case.
In this case, that's not the case, right. So therefore, in other words, they're saying it's Mutter, even if it fell in, even if the Truma fell in second. There is, by the way, there's a Tosfos over... Tosfos later in Armasechta versus in Psachim, because a good part of the Stuvia is in Psachim as well. There's a whole Stuvia about Zeb Zegodim also over there. Tosfos later in Armasechta versus Tosfos in Psachim discussed the question, what if, by the way, what if, we're saying over here, according to the Chachamim, if the Truma piece was enough to be Mechametz all by itself, then it would be Osir. What about if the Heter piece was also enough to be Mechametz by itself? Let's say you have a batch of 10 pounds of dough. Let's say in total you need 1 pound of sour in order to make such a dough chometz. So now we're saying in our case over here you had a half a pound of truma and half a pound of chulin fell in, the chachamim are going to say it's not a problem. If it was a whole pound, because you need a pound total and you don't have a pound of truma. So if a pound of truma fell in, definitely it would be also a coin for chachamim. What if it was a pound of truma and a pound of chulin that fell in? So the chulin by itself is enough to be mechametz. The truma is also enough to be mechametz. That's the question. So Tosfos later in Armasechta versus Tosfos in Psachim discusses the question, would it be also in that case? On the one hand, you have enough truma to be mechametz. On the other hand, you also have enough chulin to be mechametz by itself.
But Tosfos is chulin.
If it was chulin, obviously, no. Rabbi Eliezer is the one saying first or second.
Right.
According to the Chachamim, that it doesn't matter which one fell in first. It just matters whether there's enough truma to be mechametz. The question is, what if there's enough truma to be mechametz and there's also enough chulin to be mechametz? There's 1 pound of each. Tosfos later in Armasechta versus Tosfos in Psachim take two different tacks on it. Different collections of Tosfos on different Masechtas were written by different groups of Balei Tosfos, so they often contradict each other. The one in one place they take the view that it'll be Mutter, in the other place they take the view that it'll be also. Anyway, but back to the Gemara. V'Amar Abaye, and Abaye explains that this machloikas that we're talking about, this that Rabbi Eliezer is saying that if the Cholin fell in second, it's Mutter, is when are we saying that if the chulin one falls in second, Rabbi Eliezer is saying the dough is going to be mutter? Only if you went ahead and took out the issur one. Rashi learns that it means that before the chulin one fell in, you took out the truma. You took out the truma sourdough. No.
The piece of truma
sourdough dropped in there. It didn't get completely mixed in with the dough. You recognize, you can see where it fell. So you take out... You take out as much as you can, whatever. I mean, there's a little bit that's left. Maybe it could be bottle. It's not enough to be mechametz.
Okay.
But the point is, you take it out, and then the chulin one fell in. So now you can't say the chulin should combine together with the isser, because the isser isn't there anymore. It's true it already started having an effect, but nevertheless, it itself is already gone. So therefore, it's not a question of zeh zeh godim, because the truma sourdough at that point is gone. Ava loy kodim basilikas the isser also, but... Abaye says, according to Rabbi Eliezer, if you did not take out the truma sourdough before the chulin sourdough fell in, then Rabbi Eliezer would be saying it's also. And therefore, now that's the case of Zev Zagorim. Neither one by itself was enough to make the dough, was enough to make the dough chometz. You need the two of them together. And yet Abaye is saying, according to Rabbi Eliezer, if both of them are present there together, the truma and the cholin, then it will be altered. So we see Rabbi Eliezer holds Zev Zagorim altar, and not in the case of Avodah Zarah. There it's talking about truma. So there you have, Rabbi Eliezer could be the one who's saying that Zev Zagorim is always altar across the board. The problem with that is, only my time of the Rabbi Eliezer could Abaye. Fine, but how do we know that that's the correct explanation of Rabbi Eliezer's opinion? That is like Abaye says. Dilma time of the Rabbi Eliezer mishum da acha acha naniba. Maybe the reason is, as Rabbi Eliezer says on the surface, where he says, you go according to the last one, meaning it depends which one completed the job. E gomer bi isura asura. Namely, we would say, if what completed the job of making the dough chometz is what's offered, then all he said in the Mishnah was, I go according to the second one. Abaye is the one who's interpreting that to mean that if the truma fell in first and then you removed it and then the chulin one fell in, then it will be mutter. But who says that's what it means? Who maybe Rabbi Eliezer means, maybe Rabbi Eliezer means, doesn't matter. Even if the truma one fell in first and then it's still there when the chulin one falls in, doesn't matter. The chulin one is the one that finished the job of making it chomet, therefore without having been taken out, right? So you could argue if it was completed through the Isser, so therefore if the Truma fell in second and that's the one that completed the job of making a Chometz, then it's also the Igomer Beheter Mutarin, and if, right, regardless whether you take it out, and if it was completed Beheter, then it'll be Mutar, Bein Stalke or Bein Lai Stalke, whether you took it out or you didn't take it out. So in other words, that statement of Rabbi Eliezer, only if we learn it like a Bayer are we saying that it's a case of Zev Zagor. If you don't learn it like a Bayer, then it's not a question of Zev Zagor. Or just the opposite. You would say that Zev Zagorim, you would say that according to him, you could say that actually there you have a case of Zev Zagorim, which is Mutter, because you have as long as the Heter came second.
Right.
Yeah. So whether
it was removed or not.
Right. So therefore, so we can't say that that Mishnah is where we see that Rabbi Eliezer would hold Zev Zagorim as author across the board. Okay. We have to find something else. Rather, we're going to try that it's the case where Rabbi Eliezer and the Rabbanon argue about the case of wood. Well, we're going to see it. We're going to see what the case is. By the way, Tosfos points out, by now we're kind of digressing from our original point. We already dealt with Rabbi Yossi and the Rabbanon. Now we're just dealing with, if you're going to argue that one of these brises we quoted before goes according to Rabbi Eliezer, we have to find where we find this opinion of Rabbi Eliezer. But as far as for entering Rabbi Yossi and the Rabbanon, that we're already done with for the time being.
Because now
we're just trying to figure a side thing. You mentioned as a third opinion, Rabbi Eliezer. Where do we see he has this opinion?
Are we going to come back to this side point?
We are going to come back to Rabbi Yossi and the Rabbanon, yes. El Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbanon de Eitzim. Rather, we can say it's the machlokas of Rabbi Eliezer and the Rabbanon when it comes to wood. Namely, the Tanan, we learn in a Mishnah. It's actually the next Mishnah on Omer Beis. Not the Haimena Eitzim. We say if you take wood from an Asheda tree, Asura Bana, that wood is Otobana, provided, of course, it wasn't done in the way of this, or that it was done by a Jew, because a Jew can't be Mavakal of a Dazare. What if you took that wood and used it to, and what if you took that wood and used it to fire up an oven? Chodosh yutas. Well, if that oven is a new oven, then the only thing you can do is to destroy the oven. Now, what happens like this? Ovens in those days, remember, were made out of clay, and then they would be heated up to fire them up in order to bake the clay, so they could be used from then on as a normal oven.
Right.
So now you have, if this oven, the first time it was fired up was using wood from an Asherah, then now you have the oven is going to forever be osur, because now it was made into a full fledged oven using wood of an Asherah.
What do you mean
yutas? Yutas means it has to be torn down. It has to be torn apart. It's osur b'hana, in other words. Yoshon yutan. On the other hand, if it's an old oven, it's already previously been fired up, all you have to do is let it cool down so that you don't bake using the heat from the wood of the Asherah. You wait till it cools down, then you fire. No, you don't have to kasher it necessarily. But you do have to let it cool down in order that now there's no benefit from, so there's no heat from the wood of the Asherah.
Right.
And the Mishnah continues. Also, by a path, if you bake bread in such an oven, also with wood of an Asherah, asura b'hana, that bread will be also b'hana.
If you didn't let it.
Right. If you didn't let it cool. Right. Right. Well, in either case, actually, whether we're talking about a new oven, so in the case of a new oven, So if you have, one second. In the case of a new oven, if it was fired up for the first time using Asherah wood, that oven, we said, becomes also.
Yeah.
Now the next time, even you use regular wood, now you have Zeva Zegerda. Now you have an oven which is osir, now you have an oven which is osir, and wood which is mutter.
Yeah.
And that's the case of Zeva Zegerda. If you're talking about that it's an old, if it's talking about that it's an old oven, the oven is, then it's the other way around. The oven is mutter. It was fired up originally with regular wood.
Right.
Now you're using Asherah wood in it. Right. So you have an oven which is mutter and wood which is osir. Either way, it's the case of Zeva Zegerda. Yeah. So then either way, asura b'hana, that bread is going to be osir b'hana. If that bread then becomes mixed up with other loaves of bread, all of them become osabana. Now, Rabbi Eliezer says what you can do in that case, you can take the hana and you can take that hana and throw it into the Yamamelach so that it will be, so in other words, it will be destroyed and then it will be mutter. What do we mean by the hana? Rashi learns what it means is like this. There's a certain you were baking bread.
Mm-hmm.
There's a certain increase in value, you could say, of the bread that was caused by this wood of the Asherah. What you do is you figure that out. You have, let's say, a loaf of bread that's going to be selling now for $3. So you figure out the wood that I used for baking this bread contributed a dollar of the bread's value. So therefore, what we would say is you take a dollar and throw it into the, in this case, we use Asherah wood.
You're saying the bread because it's baked? Or
yeah, because it's baked. Because like this, you have the flour was worth money and the shaping it and whatever was worth money.
Value.
But yeah, added value, basically. So Rashi learns, you take this added value that was caused by the wood of the Asherah, you throw that into the Yamamelach, and then the bread is osir. The bread is mutter. I mean, yeah. And then, on the other hand, Tosfos brings, and then a number of other mafarshim also discuss that what it means is yolachanol yamamelach would mean the full value of that bread. So you'd have to take the entire $3, let's say, and throw it into the yamamelach. There's also a further machlokes about this among rishonim. Are we talking about when we say over here nisavu ba'cherim kolon asuras b'hana, and then we say yolachanol yamamelach? Do we mean even if you have this piece of bread by itself? All you have to do is put the hana into the yamamelach, and then the bread will be mutter, maybe not to eat, but at least it will be mutter b'hana. Or are we talking about only in the case where the bread was mixed up with a lot of other loaves of bread, and you don't want to have to throw them all out, then you take the $1 or the $3, as the case may be, and throw that in the yamamelach in order to be mutter all of them. But if the bread itself was still ba'ein, if you still recognize this loaf of bread was baked in an oven with hasheder wood, then it would be also b'hana regardless.
The whole bread.
So yeah, the machlokes are showing him understanding the exact.
The whole bread has improvement and the initial bread.
Right. So you have two different ways of understanding hana. Do we mean hana just the added value because of the wood, or do we mean the whole value of the bread? And number two, does it apply even when the bread is be'ein, or does it apply even when the bread is be'ein, that it's by itself, not having mixed up with others, or is it only if it got mixed up with other ones? Anyway. So that's Rabbi Eliezer is saying that. Omruloi, ein pidyon la'avodas kochavim, that Rabbanan answer back to Rabbi Eliezer. They say there's no such thing as redeeming avodah zarah. You can't say that something becomes mutter v'hana of avodah zarah by redeeming it. So we'll learn, and we'll talk on other days why Rabbi Eliezer says what he does. But the point is that Rabbanan depligi alei de Rabbi Eliezer maninu. So now we have to ask, who are these Rabbanan who are arguing with Rabbi Eliezer? Are you going to say it's the same Rabbanon as in the, are you going to say it's the same as in the case of the wood earlier in the Mishnah? Achmuri machmuri. What do you mean? They're being more machmuri. They're being more machmuri. They're saying that you have to tear apart the whole oven. They're saying that the whole bread is osir. So they're the ones who are being more machmuri than Rabbi Eliezer. They can't be the ones. So one second, let's back up a second. We see over here, Rabbi Eliezer holds again in a case of Zeva Zegerda, which is the case of this oven with the wood of Asherah. Rabbi Eliezer is saying it is also b'hana. So now, when we said before that there are Rabbanon who disagree with Rabbi Eliezer and are saying it won't be also b'hana when Zeva Zegerda, it can't be the Rabbanon of that very same Mishnah, because here they're more machmir. They say the whole oven has to be torn apart, and you can't even do pidyon. So who are they? Ela Rabbanon disur. Evidently, it must be the Rabbanon from the previous case involving the sourdough, where they...
Yeah.
Right. Well, right. In other words, it's not necessarily the same Rabbanon in each Mishnayot. So therefore, so we would see that, and so there we would see then, Rabbi Eliezer apparently is holding Zev Zegorim as Osir. The Rabbanon are holding that Zev, are holding over there Zev Zegorim as Mutter, because they say as long as each piece of sourdough by itself is not enough to be Mechamis, then you're good. Right. However, we're back to the problem, as we said at the top of the Amud, Eimer, Deshamat, Beulah, Rabbanon, and Mekili, Besur. We only find that they're makel when it comes to sourdough of Truma. Are they makel necessarily by Avodah Zarah? So we're still back to our question. We had two brises before. One that said that a field that was fertilized with Avodah Zarah fertilizer, or a cow that was fattened up with Avodah Zarah beans. One brise said you can have hanah from it as is, apparently because Zev Zegorim is Mutter. The other one said no, because Zev Zegorim is also. Rabbi Eliezer, we established now, says Zev Zegorim is also. Who says that Rabbanon would disagree with him when it comes to Avodah Zarah? So how can we say that those two brises reflect the opinions of Rabbi Eliezer and the Chachamim, respectively? We don't have any basis for saying that. We have to go back to our original assumption that the two brises represent the opinions of Rabbi Yossi and the Chachamim. And then we're back to our problem originally from our Mishnah versus the previous Sugya earlier in the parak about destroying Avodah Zarah, where Rabbi Yossi and the Rabbanon are contradicting themselves about Zev Zegorim.
And that is because we cannot prove...
Because we don't have a basis to say that, even if we say that the Rabbanon, we're saying that in the case of the wood, the Chachamim are even more machmir than Rabbi Eliezer, and in the case of the Sa'ur, find their makel, but that's Sa'ur, that's a Truma, that's not Avodah Zarah. So where do we have a basis for saying they would be makel by a cow that was fattened up with Avodah Zarah beans to say that you can shecht it right then and there? And
We don't.
No, we have to go back to what our original assumption, that the two brises about the field and about the cow are one according to Rabbi Yossi and one according to the Rabban. So Rabbi Yossi, now again, Rabbi Yossi, we said by Orla, says that Zev Zegorim is Mutter, because he said, for example, that you can plant a nut of Orla, and according to Rashi, the tree from it is right away Mutter, because Zev Zegorim, and even according to Tosfos,
so
you can take a branch from that.
This last case up, because
we're saying, forget about Rabbi Eliezer. Rabbi Eliezer is not in the picture anymore. We're going back to Rabbi Yossi and then Rabban. So Rabbi Yossi is going to say it's Mutter by Orla, and he's going to say this. He's going to say it's also Mutter when it comes to Avodah Zarah. Why? So he's going to say that's mutter by Avodah Zarah, because that's why we find earlier in the parak that he says you can grind up Avodah Zarah, throw the sawdust to the wind, and we don't have to worry about Zev Zegorim. We don't have to worry that other plants are going to grow from this sawdust. What about on Mishnah, where he's concerned about the leaves falling from the Asherah tree and fertilizing the vegetables? The answer is Rabbi Yossi the Divrei de Rabbanan. Rabbi Yossi in our Mishnah is not talking his own opinion. He's saying, according to you, Rabbanan, you yourselves are not being consistent. Lidi di Zev Zegorim Mutter. He says to them, Lidi di Zev Zegorim Mutter. As far as the Gemara is talking, the Gemara is telling us what Rabbi Yossi would say. Lidi di Zev Zegorim Mutter. According to me, as far as I'm concerned, Zev Zegorim is always Mutter. Therefore, I have no problem with the ground up of the Zara. Therefore, I would have no problem with the leaves here either. Therefore, I also have no problem with the nuts of Arla. Because I don't make a distinction between Orla and Avodah Zarah and anything else. You, Rabbanan, who do hold that Zev Zegorim is Osir, and therefore that's why you're arguing with me about grinding up the Avodah Zarah and scattering it to the wind, at least shouldn't you agree with me then that in that case, planting vegetables under a tree should be also during the summer or during the winter. After all, I mean, you're saying you can plant vegetables there in the winter because the shade is harming them, it's not helping them, but aren't you forgetting about the leaves? The leaves are helping them. So it's Zev Zegorim. Me, I wouldn't have a problem with it at all, but if you have a problem with Zev Zegorim, why are you not taking into consideration the leaves?
You should have. You should be consistent, because
otherwise
you're telling them.
And what would the Rabbanan answer to that? They would say, the Amar Mori Grei Devkana, again, like Ramori Grei Devkana before said, in connection with the skin of the animal, that you have sometimes a gain which is offset by an equal or greater loss. The same way over here, you have a gain from the leaves that's offset by an equal or greater loss from the lack of sunlight for the plant,
and therefore
it would be mutter. So they're going to say, yes, we hold Zev Zegorim as Osir. However, in this case, we don't consider it Zev Zegorim because the gain is offset by the law. So Rabbi Yossi, what we're saying now is, what the conclusion we came to so far is, Rabbi Yossi would say Zev Zegorim is Mutter across the board. The Rabbanon would say generally its author. However, if you have, unless, if you have, therefore, that's why they're saying it's ground up of it as order. You can't scatter to the wind because you're going to have a problem with Zebra Zebra. It's not offset by anything else. Here, where it's being offset by the shade, then they'll allow it. Yeah. Whereas Rabbi Yossi is arguing you're not being consistent. But I'm on an answer. This is a special
case. You're right.
Yeah. Okay. Who is the halacha like? Amar Rav Yehuda, Amar Shmuel. Halacha for Rav Yossi. The halacha is like Rav Yossi, which would mean that Zev Zagurim is Muslim. And hold on. Sometimes it happens. It's not common, but it happens. But wait. Let's learn the next couple of lines of the Gemara, and we also have to learn some stuff on other days, and then we can talk about what the practical halacha is about it. It ends up being quite complicated, actually. Hahu ginsa di is gabal b'zibla d'avad eschachavim. There was once a garden that was fertilized using fertilizer of avad zara. So the question became whether the vegetables from the garden are mutabana or not. Shalach Rav Amram kamei Rav Yosef. So Rav Amram sent a message to Rav Yosef to ask what the halacha. Rav Yosef says the amora, right? Amalei, he answered, Hachi Amar Rav Yehuda Amashma, along with Rav Yosef. That's it. The halacha is like Rav Yosef. Zev zegurim is mutter, and therefore you're good. Now, however, it turns out to be not so simple because let's learn the next Mishnah and then start talking about it. The Mishnah continues, not only mena eitzim, if you took wood from an asher, the first half of this Mishnah we learned on Amud Aleph already, so we'll go it over again. Not only mena eitzim, if you took wood from an asherah tree, asurin bahana, that wood is also bahana. Obviously, again, if a goy took it off in a way that's mevatel, then we're going to say in the next Mishnah, that's fine, but then we're not talking about that. Hisik benefatana, if you use such wood from an asher to fire up an oven, im chodosh yukas, if it's a new oven, the oven has to be destroyed, because again, then you have the oven has now been made into an oven using wood from an asher. Now, that on the face of
it's like when you're saying you plumb the tree, the shem of it is all right, so to speak. It's
sort of, I mean, now you have it, became an oven. However, though, the thing is, we just finished saying that Zev Zegurim is mutter. Here you have Zev Zegurim again, because you have wood from an asherah that was used to fire it up and make it into a solid, but on the other hand, you have the clay of the oven wasn't also, so Zev Zegurim. So if we said before, if we just established the points of Rav Yossi, Zev Zegurim is also, that should mean that when we say in our Mishnah that if the oven is new, it has to be destroyed, would not be correct according to halacha. In the end, the halacha would not be like that. So wait,
the halacha is indeed,
the oven does not have to be destroyed.
It doesn't.
I think
we hold by
Rabbi Yossi. Well, one second. So wait. There is a vote from one of the Acharonim, I think the Avnei Nezer, which says nevertheless, maybe you could still say you have a mitzvah to destroy the oven in order to destroy any vestige of Avodah Zarah. But as far as the technicality that the oven should be also, right. The Im Yoshen Yosan, if it's an old oven, so it was already previously fired up, you only have to cool it down, so you don't have any hanah from the heat. Also, by the path of Surabana, if you bake bread in such an oven, that bread is also Bana.
No bread.
Yes. Well, again, on the face of it, either kind, on the face of it, we're talking about whether a new one or an old one. Because again, if it was an old one, then you have wood of Asherah is being used in it. So therefore, you have Zev Zegurim. One second. Again, if we hold Zev Zegurim as Mutter, then it would mean the bread is not Mutter.
Right, exactly.
Okay. But again, it's going to be a little more complicated than that, so wait. But so first we'll learn the Mishnah, then we'll start talking about practical halacha.
Okay.
So also by the path of Surabana, we said if you bake bread in such an oven, it would be also Bana. Again, on the face of it, because of the assumption of Zev Zegurim is also.
Right.
And if that bread then gets mixed up with other bread, then all of them are also Bana. Rabbi Eliezer will say that you take the Hana, as we said, you take the Hana to Yam HaMelech, and then the rest of it becomes Mutter. Amrulay and Pidyon Lavad is Kachavim. That Rabban an answer you can't be poyda Avodah Zarah. Now why Rabbi Eliezer says what he does is basically because he holds it's not really a matter of pidyon, he holds it's a matter of Avodah Zarah is also b'hana. If you're throwing that amount into the Yam HaMelech, then you're not having hana from Avodah Zarah anymore. But then Rabban disagrees.
So it's not poyda.
So in other words, he would say it's not really a kind. Of, it's not really pidya, and it's you're destroying the value of the avodah zarah, and then yeah,
okay.
Continues the mission. Not only men of karkur. If you took from this asherah tree, if you took a karkur, it's a kind of large needle. It's a kind of large stick made out of wood they used to use when they were weaving. So you set up a loom for weaving. You have the shefi threads that are supposed to be parallel to each other, so you can weave the eight of thread back and forth between them. When you first set them up, you may may have, some of them are tangled together, some of them are not in the right places or whatever, so you use a kind of, you use a stick to bang on them gently in order to separate them. That thing is called a karakuru.
Okay.
So a karakuru is very essential to the weaving process.
To straighten them out.
Yeah. So a karakuru is a very essential thing for the weaving process. So if you took a karakuru from an asheva tree, off of our nut.
Piece of wood, basically.
So that piece of wood, again, would be off of our nut. Or a vayis abeged, if you use now that karakuru to weave a garment, osabana, then again that garment would be osabana. Again, on the face of it, because of zev zegorim, so wait, if that garment gets mixed up with other garments, ba'acherim ba'acherim, and then those other ones get mixed up with still other ones, kol anasurin ba'ana, all of them would be osabana. Tosfos discusses that on the days that the
Tosfos say that many loaves of bread.
So that was in case, right. So Tosfos on Amud Aleph talked about the girsa. We have, again, we have over here acherim ba'acherim. There's also a whole sugi in Zvachim that discusses this whole issue about things getting mixed up with each other. Tosfos discusses that maybe we shouldn't be girdas ba'acherim ba'acherim. If you have, for example, one loaf of bread, which is osur, or one garment that's osur, that gets mixed up with 100 others, and then one of that group gets mixed up with a bunch of others, maybe those other ones would not be osur. There's a whole story in Zvachim. We'll get there in a few months, and we'll get there later this summer. Anyway, so kol anasurim ba'ana, all of them are also ba'ana. Again, Rabbi Eliezer and the Yerla Hanah the Yama Melech. Again, Rabbi Eliezer says all you have to do is take the Hanah and throw it into the Yama Melech, and then we'll be mutter. Again, it's the Macholikas are showing him whether he means even the original one when it's the Ein, or whether he means only after it's mixed up together with other ones. Omru lo ein pidyon la'avodas kachavim, and again, the Rabbanon say to Rabbi Eliezer that there's no pidyon for avodas zarah.
You have to destroy
everything. Right. Okay. So the Gemara says it's tzricha. Now we need both cases of our Mishnah. The Mishnah had mentioned a case of an oven that was fired up with wood and a case of a garment that was woven using a karakuru. If we only mention the first case of the bread, you would say Bahakam Rabbi Eliezer, there Rabbi Eliezer is being makel, that you can throw the Hanah value into the Yamamelah. Because by the time the bread is finished baking, the Isser, the wood of Isser, has been burnt up. So therefore, there's no Isser Be'en anymore there. The Isser doesn't exist in its original form.
Yeah, but I mean, it still helps.
It helps, but nevertheless, Rabbi Eliezer can argue it can be makel because it doesn't exist in its original form. Avo karakur, the Isser is sort of Be'en, but when it comes to the karakur, the weaving stick, where it still continues to exist when the garment is finished. Maybe he would agree with the Rabbanon. In that case, you can't do anything about that garment. It's also bana. The Iyashmein and Kalku. And if we only have the second case, v'ha'kamir Rabbanon, I will pass ema moedil of the Yezer. But maybe in the case of bread, they would be moedil because again, the is no longer exists. Tzricha, and therefore we need both of them. Now, Amr of Chia Breid Rav Banachmeni, Amr of Chista, Amr of Ziri, Halacha for Rabbi Eliezer, the Halacha is like Rabbi Eliezer, you can do this Yerlech Hanah L'Yam HaMelech. You can throw the Hanah into the Yam HaMelech, and it'll be Mutter. Again, according to some Rishonim, even if the bread or the garment exists all by itself, or according to others, only if it got mixed into other ones.
So,
and again, you also have the Machlok, that's what Hanah we're talking about exactly. Okay. Ikadami, another version, is Amr of Chista, Omer li Abba bar Rav Chista, Hachi Omer Ze'iri. So according to the second version, it's not just that Rav Chista says in the name of Ze'iri, but Rav Chista says that Abba bar Rav Chista told him that this is what Ze'iri said. Halacha k'Rav Eliezer. Okay, now is that across the board? Omer Rav Abba Abba, Loishonu el Pas. This that we're saying, that you're allowed to do that, Yer l'chanol, Yama Melech, only applies to one loaf of bread. Because in the loaf of bread, there's not really a noticeable issue. You know that this bread was baked using an oven or using wood of Asherah, but it's not visible in the finished product. And the same thing with a garment. But if you have a barrel of Yain Nesach that got mixed up with other barrels, then you can't do that. You can't say Yer l'chanol Yam HaMelech and then say that you should be able to that you should be able to sell each barrel individually because you have the Isser actually exists in a full form. You can actually do this. If you knew which barrel it was, you would know that it was a barrel of Yain. No, but that the point is, in other words, like this. In other words, the difference is like this. With a piece of bread, with a loaf of bread, even if you know which particular loaf it is, it's not you know that there's a difference. This one was baked with Asherah wood, the other ones were not. But there's no actual noticeable difference between it and the other one. Whereas Yain Nesach, you know that this barrel is Yain Nesach. The problem is now it got mixed up with a lot of other ones. So you're going to argue, you should say, Yer l'chanol Yam HaMelech, that you should take the value of that barrel and throw it in the Yam HaMelech, and then you should be mutter to sell each barrel individually. You can't do that. You can't do that because it's still there, exactly.
Still there.
Yeah.
Why is the bread not there?
Because the bread is not visibly different because it was baked with Asherah, with Asherah word.
Well, two barrels, Yain Nesach and kosher wine, and they're both the same exact.
No, but okay. Rather, okay. I should say it's not so much that it's not visible, but the point is the iser does not exist in the bread itself. The wood was what was also after all. The bread is only also because it was baked with avodah zarah.
So the bread in itself.
The bread in and of itself. Well, it's also, as we said, because it is also because it was baked with Asherah wood. But on the other hand, it's not the original iser. The original iser was the wood from the Asherah, and the wood from the Asherah is not in the bread. Whereas the actual yain nesach is itself. No, it didn't. But over here, you have an actual barrel of yain nesach. Right. The reason why I wanted to learn the Gemara also is because the fact that we see that halacha is like Rabbi Eliezer, and the fact that we see that there's a distinction between different types of isurim, that factors into the whole question when we say zev is a gerdim and not. So wait. Rashi does point out, now what you can do is you have, let's say, 100 barrels where you know one of them is yain nesach. Fine, what you can do is you can sell the whole 100 to a goy for the price of 99, where that way you're not having hanah from the iser, that you can do. But to say, so if each barrel is worth, if each barrel...
All the 100
barrels. Yeah, a goy can't be mivatel yain nesach, a goy can be mivatel of a desara. There's talking yain nesach. Because yain nesach is not subject to bitzel, it's a whole different kind of iser. First of all, if it was actually poured to avodah zarah, then it's tikroivus avodah zarah, and we're going to learn in the next parak tikroivus can never be bottled anyway. But even if not, even if we're talking yain nesach as in stam yainim, which is also mid rabbanon, bittul doesn't apply.
I'm talking not
stam yainim. Okay, but even whatever, bittul is not relevant. Bittul is to an actual idol itself. It's things that are used. There were things
not
that are used.
Right.
Not tikroivus, right? Yeah. Okay. So anyway, so the point is now. So again, you can't say, for example, let's say, so each barrel is worth $10. You can't say that you're going to take $10, throw it in the Yam HaMelech, and now you can start selling off each barrel individually. Because the problem is, at some point, you're going to be selling a barrel of Yain Nesach, and you can't do that. What you can do is, so you have 100 barrels. Together, then 100 barrels will be worth $1,000. What you're going to do is, you're going to sell them to a guy for $990. So you're not charging him for the one which is Yain Nesach. That will be allowed.
So then you can use that one barrel.
No. So you're selling them all as a group. You're selling them all as a group.
For $90.
For $990. Yeah.
Whatever.
And that would be mutter, but to throw it into the Yam HaMelech, that not the same.
And then if you...
Then that's it. Then you have the other 990, because there were definitely 99 barrels that were mutter over there. And by the way, the Yerushalmi points out that there, with wine, there's more reason to be able to do that, because no Jew is going to buy wine from a goy. You know it's also. As opposed to bread and clothes, it's not so simple. Yeah. Anyway. So that's one way of looking at it, then, is that this only applies to bread, but not to barrels of wine. But Rav Chista, after the Chavis Mutter, so Chista says such a thing would be mutter even when it comes to barrels. You could also take $10, throw it into the Yam HaMelech, and then be able to sell each barrel individually.
That's on the halacha?
The halacha is, yes, the halacha is like that. No, the halacha is like Rav Yehuda. It happened once that there was a certain person who a barrel of yain nesach got mixed in among his barrels of wine. Also, they came to the chista to ask what to do. Omar, the chista tells him, shkol arba zuzi, take four zuzi, which is the typical price of a barrel of wine, the shodi benara, throw it into the river, so it won't be usable. The mishteri loch, and then the whole thing will be mutter to you. You'll even be able to sell them individually, or use them as Rashi says for laundry, or give them to a goy to drink, or whatever. It doesn't matter. As long as you are right, or you two against one. But therefore, it's good enough. Rashi, one chavis is worth four zuzis.
That's the typical price. Yeah. So Rashi makes a distinction over here. There's actually later on in the Masechta, we're going to talk about a case where Yain Nesach got mixed into a pit full of kosher wine. So we say over there, Rav Shimon Gamliel says that that you can sell the whole thing to goyim out. That you can sell the whole thing to goyim, subtracting the value of the Yain Nesach. So there we're taking the view that ain pidyon, but over here so in that case the only way to do it is there's no hana from the yain nesach. The difference is over there the iser doesn't exist in an obvious form because it's mixed in with the wine, whereas over here again you have one barrel that exists among all the other ones, and therefore Rav Chista is telling him, yeah, you take, right, it's not actually mixed with the others, mixed in the sense that you don't know which one it is, but But it stands as an individual thing by itself, and therefore that's why you have to throw it into the river. Okay, so what is the bottom line? So now in the last couple of minutes that we have, let's talk about what is the bottom line about this whole Zebedee Goyim. Yeah. So on the face of it, that's we established on Amud Aleph that Zebedee Goyim is Mutar. However, you have a number of opinions of Rishonim about it. First of all, you have the opinion of the Ramah, which is brought in the Tur, which says that there's a distinction that even after all said and done, we did talk on Omer Aleph about the possibility that there's a distinction between Avodah Zarah and other Isurim. Maybe we say Zebedee Goyim is also Avodah Zarah and Mutar only by other Isurim.
Why would he say that?
Because Avodah Zarah is more common. The question is, therefore, that would explain why our Mishnah is saying, for example, that the bread is also and that the oven is also and so on and so forth, without contradicting our conclusion before Zebedee Goyim, because here we're talking about a Zara.
Is always mutar.
Well, that Ramah can understand that to mean that it's mutar by everything except Avodah Zarah. Even though we said before, Rav Yossi himself might, we discussed whether Rav Yossi himself might accept such a distinction. So we could say therefore that we accept that distinction, we say it's also when it comes to Avodah Zarah. We do not say it's also when it comes to other Isurim. And in fact they talk about, for example, that's one opinion. You also have though as far as the question of bread specifically, there's a distinction, the Ramah where there's a Rishon, you have the Ramah where there's an Akron. The Ramah makes a distinction with the Ramah with an Aleph. Now we're talking about the Ramah with an, before we said the Ramah with a Hey. Rameir Halevi, and now we're talking about Rav Moshe Isserles. So he makes a distinction in Shulchan Aruch between whether, based on a Gemara in Pesachim that also talks about the whole Zebedee Goyim business, that it depends whether the bread baked directly in front of the flame from the Avodah Zarah stuff, or was it just from the heat of the oven? Like if you took out all the wood from the oven and then baked using the heat, the difference would be that one you have is a direct thing from Avodah Zarah and one is more indirect. So
they never said that Avodah Zarah, you can have an iron direct.
No, but therefore that's a distinction that you can make. It can be again. You have a Gemara in Sochem that addresses this. So you have that distinction. Because Avodah Zarah doesn't exist there at the time. I mean, you also have all Gemara made the point that the Avodah Zarah was burnt up. The Asherah wood was burnt up by the time the bread is baked. You have the Rishonim who argue that doesn't matter. Even ashes of Avodah Zarah are still altered. But nevertheless, so you have, if the ashes themselves are gone, then there's more reason to be maple. But with all that said, you also have the Taz wants to draw a whole distinction between Zebedee Goyim, where the one that's also is indispensable to the finished product. For example, over here, wood is indispensable to have bread baked, versus, for example, what we talked at the end of Amud Aleph, for example, a garden that was fertilized using Avodah Zarah fertilizer, where the plants would grow without the fertilizer. Therefore, we could argue that's also where that's mutter, where this case is also. The Shach argues on the Taz and says, I don't accept that distinction. There's a good deal of discussion about it, and actually, well, now it's time for Meir, but there's also some interesting discussion how that all plays out also in connection to Chometz on Pesach. The Magen Avraham says, and you have to never bring that Chometz also because Oysa B'Mashehu is more chumrajik as far as this also, that we say Zebedee Goyim is also, unless the Alter Rebbe says, unless it's a hefted gadol, unless there's a big loss involved. So it's just complicated. This that we're saying Zebedee Goyim is also is not so straightforward after all.